Okay, welcome back. We hope everyone had a good yontif. We are at the bottom of Daf Vav, Amud Aleph, in Masechet Ta'anit. We were talking about the different. You remember last week, last time we met, I showed a chart, which unfortunately I don't still have to. Do I? Might I? Hold on, I think I actually found it. Yes, hold on a second. Here, I was showing this chart. About the three different shitot, about when the first rain begins. The first rain is called the revi'ah. Or in biblical Hebrew, it's called the yoreh. As in, we say in Kriyat Shema, the yoreh u'malkosh. But when it begins, well, you know, we all just had Simchas Torah, and we started saying, who's banging around here? We all just had Simchas Torah, and we started saying Tefillat Geshem. Here in Eretz Yisrael, next Motzei Shabbat, in a week and a half from now, on Motzei Shabbat Noach, on Zayin Cheshvan, we'll start saying V'tein Talu Matal Avracha. But we all have started, and you in Chutz La'aretz will only start at the beginning of December, but all have already started saying Mashiv Aruch Murid HaGoshem, because as you know, as we said in the Tefillat Geshem, as was a kind of theme of underlying Sukkot and certainly the Hoshanot, it's now we're now getting ready for the rainy season. You can feel it here in Efrat. In the evening, it's already moist and chilly, even though during the day it's still unseasonably warm. The weatherman says another week of nice weather, but then after that already it'll start being cold. I'm a little concerned because we're all still davening outdoors. I don't know how much longer we'll be able to keep that up. This Shabbat we're planning on having a minion in the backyard for Breishit, but for Noach already we might be looking at the Geshem that's appropriate for that parasha, which would mean, unfortunately, probably that we miss reading that parasha unless we are back in shul by then. But there were three opinions, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi, about the first rain, the Yoreh, or the Revi'ah, when it begins. And there are three phases to that rain. The Bechira, the Benonit, and the Afelo, the last rain, Vafilu. Whether it's the third, Rabbi Meir says that the three stages are expected on the third, the seventh, and the 17th of Cheshvan. Rabbi Yehuda pushes it all back to the seventh, the 17th, and the 23rd. And Rabbi Yossi begins the latest, the 17th of Cheshvan, the 23rd of Cheshvan, and Rosh Chodesh Kislev. That's where we left off two weeks ago. So the Gemara asks, Keman azlaha detanya Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer gshamim sheyardu shiva yamim ze achar ze ata mone bahem revi'ah rishona ushniya ushlishit. So whose opinion is it that what if you get at the beginning of
where exactly are you?
Here, we're at the bottom, four lines from the bottom of Daf Vav Amud Aleph. You should be able to see it on the screen, no?
You might have to scroll down, Ben.
Here, I just synchronized at the bottom. You see, it's highlighted. There's an arrow. So what if when it starts raining in the fall, it comes in the Mabul? You get seven days of straight rain. Does that count as the first rainfall? Or does it count as the first and the second rainfall? Or the first, second, and third rainfall? The Gemara seems to be saying, if you have seven straight days of rain at the beginning of the rainy season, should that count for the first three rainfalls? Rashi seems to explain it slightly differently, but let's go with the simple reading here. So whose opinion is it that if you get in one fell swoop seven straight days of rain, it counts as the first, second, and third portions of the first, of the beginning of the rain, of the first rainfall? Kiman k'Rebbe Yossi. This is the opinion of Rebbe Yossi, that if such a thing should happen, such a very rainy beginning to the season, it counts as all of the rainfall. Omar Rav Chisda, Halacha Rabbi Yossi. Bishlama Revi'a Rishona, Lish'ol, Shlishit Lehitanot, Shnia Lemai. So what's the difference? Like, what do we need to know? What do we need to know? Like, what are we, weathermen? What do we need to know? This is the first rainfall. This is the second portion. This is the second third of the first rainfall. The third. So the Gemara says, no, you need to know. You need to know when each one is, because there's a halachic nafkamina. What's the halacha? So the first beginning of the rainfall, that has to do, that's significant, because that's when we start making the request for, that's when we start making the request for rain. Now, it happens that we start making the request for rain on the 7th of Cheshvan, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. This is a problem, because the Gemara says the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. It could be that our text of the Gemara is a little mixed up. But our halacha is that we start davening for Tein Talu Matal Avracha on the 7th of Cheshvan. So you need to know when the first rainfall is due, because you need to know when to start saying Tein Talu Matal Avracha.
And Steinzel says, by the way, that explaining why it's Rabbi Yossi, because he's the only one that has a 7-day interval between each rainfall.
Ah, okay. So that explanation works only if you understand the text of the Gemara as we have it. The Tani Rabbi Shimon. So you need to know when the first rainfall is for Lishol, for the Sheila, for the request for rain. Shlishit Lehitanot. And you need to know when the last rainfall is due, because if the first, second, and third expected rainfalls haven't come, so that triggers the whole process of fasting as a petition for rain. And you need to know when to order the bagels, because you can't fast unless you've ordered the bagels to have for the breakfast. Shnia lemai. So what's the nafkamina? What do you need to know? What do you need to know the second rainfall for? Omar Rabbi Zera l'nidarim. In case somebody made a neder. Ditznan. And now we're at the top of Vav Omud Beis. Oh, wait, why? That's wrong. Hold on, let me change that. View, rotate page right.
Looking tiny.
Okay, you see it now?
No. Yeah, much better.
Okay. So Omar Rabbi Zeir l'nedarim ditznan hanoder ad hagshamim mishayordug shamim ad shetered rivia shnia. So if a person makes a neder, and says this thing is going to be, remember we learned nedarim, a person takes a neder and says I'm not going to eat chocolate until ad hagshamim. Until the rain.
I'll put the sukkah away in before it starts to rain.
Yeah, fair. I'll put the sukkah away. Adag shamim. So when do we say adag shamim? Does that mean you can't have chocolate until the spring when the rain stops? No, adag shamim means, you know, like when we say acharei hachagim. Right, I'll do it acharei hachagim. This week everybody got back. When is acharei hachagim? Technically speaking, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is also acharei hachagim. But everybody understands that's not the way the language. Acharei hachagim means I'll deal with it, you know, right after Yontif. I'll deal with it. That's, you know, I got to do it before October is out. Right? Maybe even I got to deal with it before Cheshvan is out. Before Tishrei is out, I mean. Right? This is the Tkufa V'Acharei HaChagim. So if somebody says, I'll do it in Ad HaGshamim, it means until the second rain. Right? Meaning until the first big cluster of rain. So there is a nafkamina for knowing when the second Rivi'ah is. Again, remember, the Rivi'ah, there are three Rivi'iyot. But here, it doesn't mean, it's not Rivi'ah from the language of quarters, right? It's, the Gemara will explain momentarily what does the word Rivi'ah mean, right? But there are three phases of the Yoreh, of the Rivi'ah.
Can I just ask for clarification? We said that Adik Shamim is, first of all, that it's after these first three rains have occurred. That's the first, that's the yard. That's the first rain after all three have occurred. Yeah?
Well, no, but...
With the three parts, it consists of three rains. Part one, part two, and part three, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so if he makes a nether, we say Adik Shamim, does the second of those three, I didn't understand before, have to occur within 7 days of the first? Would it be considered?
No, in other words, it would mean that in a normal year, at least according to Rabbi Yossi, if the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, it would mean until the 23rd of Cheshvan. That is the anticipated date of the second phase of the autumn rain.
Right. Okay, so and if it occurs later than that,
it could mean that he means that date in all cases. Like when you say, you take a neder and you say, I'll do it by the fall. So what does that mean? Does it mean until the leaves come down from the trees? Which is, after all, what fall means. Or does it mean until September 21st? September 21st is the beginning of fall? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Right? So in September 21st, even if there are no leaves on the ground, right, it's fall. So your neder would apply. So presumably Ad HaGshamim means until the beginning of the second rain, which means the 23rd. Whether or not rain has actually come.
Regardless of whether rain comes, on the 23rd, the nether reaches its...
Right, that's the understanding of the Gemara in Nedarim. Right, that's saying Ad HaGshamim, you mean until the end of this first phase, which begins on the 17th and ends on the 23rd. So the neder has to be fulfilled by the 23rd. Again, according to the halacha Lefi Rabbi Yossi. Rav Zvid said you need to know when the second phase of rain is. Lizeitim, for the olives. What about the olives? Detnan, me'ematai kol adam mutarin baleket shecha upeya. You know, the farmer would have to leave out certain portions for the poor, right? Things that got left behind, the corner of the field, etc. And the poor people would come, and it would be hefker, and they'd be able to come and take it. At a certain point, if there's still left in the field, well, you don't have to leave it out there to rot all winter, right? At a certain point, it becomes hefker, and anybody can come and take it. When is that point that the leket shikha and peya becomes open market for anybody that wants, poor or not? Mishayelchu hanemashot. From the time that the nimashot, the Gemara will explain what this is, but the nimashot are a type of poor people. It's a category of poor people. Beferet uva olalot, in the kramim, in the vineyards, when do you have to leave over the leftover grain? You know, each crop has its own vocabulary. So when you're talking about grapes, you talk about peret and olalot, the left behind grapes, or the tiny little clusters, the little clusters that aren't worth, that it's not worth the farmer to bring in to the harvest, are left over for the poor. Mishiyelchu ani'im bekerem v'yavo'u. From the point that the poor people have left the vineyard and come back a second time. Right? In other words, if they've come back a second time, that's an indicator that they've already picked over it pretty well. So, it's like they used to tell you around the dinner table when you were a kid. You know, you can't take seconds until everybody else has had. So once the poor people are coming back for a second round, so then already it's fair game for everyone else. Because if they wanted, they could have taken as much as they wanted on the first time around. Bezeitim, mishetered rivi'ah shni'ah. And for taking the unclaimed olives, that is when the rivi'ah shni'ah comes. So you see, there's another halachic denominator, demarcator, that's marked by the arrival of the second rain. Now the Gemara asks parenthetically, these poor people that are out there for leket shikcho peya in the field of in the fields of grain, my nimashot, what does it mean nimashot? Omer Rabbi Yochanan, save de azle atigra, the old zaydis that are going around with a cane. Why is that a mark of when other people can come and claim the leket shikcho peya? Because the old folks that go with the cane, you know how they are. They're bent over, so their gaze is always down on the field, and they go very slowly. Look at Rashi, Mishielchu hanimashot b'sadeh. Demikan ve'elach nityashu shar ha'aniim. Once these old Zaydis, with their bent over gaze, walking slowly with a cane, have passed through the field, they're going to catch everything. Because they're going very slowly. They're going inch by inch over the field, because that's the way they walk. So once they've passed through, you know, it's like we would say, lahavdil, not to compare poor people to locusts, but like you'd say, this place looks like a field of like a swarm of locusts passed over it. Like it means there's nothing left, right? So once the nimashot, once these old men have passed through, so basically people have given up. And once they've given up, so then it becomes hefker for anybody, if in fact there's anything left. Rashi says nimashot is lashon mimashesh, that they go and they they feel it over. They're like picking through it with their cane, you know, like they're scrabbling along on the dirt, you know, pushing along with their cane to see maybe there's a stalk of grain underneath a rock or something else. Right? With the olives, once the second rains have started, by that point, you can assume that everything's been taken, and if taka anything is left in the field or at the olive tree, so then it's hefker, and anyone, rich or poor, can take it. Okay, the Gemara goes on. Rav Papa Amar, Kedei lahalech b'shvilei harishut. He has a third nafkamina, or not a third nafkamina, a third halachic, what's the word here? A third halachic reality that's marked by the second rain. And that has to do with until when you're allowed to walk in the fields. The Omar Mar, Mahalchin kol Adam b'shvilei harishut ad sheterid rivi'ah shniyah. Chazal made a takana You know, there is such a thing as private property. But even on private property, there are rites of passage. So remember, remember in America at least, at least where I grew up in New Jersey, the lawn, the front lawn, went out to the street. But about a meter in from the street, there was a patch of grass from the street for about a meter, and then there was the sidewalk. Right? And then from the sidewalk to the house was more grass. Do you remember houses that looked like that? So the we don't have that here in Israel, right? Here all the sidewalks are really Reshut HaRabim because they're really outside of the property line of the houses or the apartment buildings. But in suburban New Jersey and elsewhere, the sidewalk is on your private property. And as a matter of fact, if the sidewalk is cracked, it's your responsibility to fix it. It's you at your expense. You have to have the sidewalk fixed. But even though it's your private property, so much so that if somebody trips because you've been negligent and haven't kept your sidewalk in repair, they can sue you. Even though it's your private property, permission is given to all passersby that they can walk on the sidewalk. You wouldn't allow a stranger to walk across your lawn. Right? If a stranger is taking a shortcut, if your house is on the corner, you expect them to walk on the sidewalk to the corner and then turn left. Even though if they cut it at an angle, they save themselves a certain amount of time, they're not allowed to do that because we don't give permission for people to walk across our lawn. At least not strangers. So Chazal were aware of this notion as well, that even on private property, passersby are allowed to trip. It doesn't mean you can trample people's fields. So there are main roads that people put into there. If you look out of our windows down into the Kremlin, you can see it to this day, right down there in the vineyards below our houses here in Efrat. You can see all of the different there are different blocks and different. David, what are you posting here?
Right to Rome.
What?
There's a great podcast that was discussing the ability to walk across private property when you're allowed or not. It's in the podcast 99% Invisible. So they have pictures and explaining. And I can, even now to this day, you're allowed certain times to walk on private property when not, and so on.
So anyway, so down in the Kremlin, you can see there are different plots of land, and each farmer has to have access to his own kerem. So there are access roads and there are ways to get in and out, even if you have to go there. So Chazal said you're allowed to walk through people's farm property on these little pathways until the second rain. Once the second rain comes, Malchin kol adam b'shvilei reshut ad sh'tered via shnia. But then at that point, we're afraid that walking on these pathways are going to cause damage to the fields, either because they get very muddy and you'll do something, or because at that point the fields have been plowed over and walking through them is going to do some harm to them. But this permission stops with the arrival of the second rain. Oh, by the way, that's another nafkamina, at least in the American context. I don't know if they talk about it in that podcast. Is snow shoveling, right? You were always obligated to, if it snowed, if you don't want to shovel your driveway, right? That's up to you. If you don't have a car and you don't need to park it, or if you have a car and it's covered in snow but you're not planning on going there, you don't have to shovel your driveway, but you do have to shovel the sidewalk out front of your house because people have a reasonable expectation that they'll be able to walk, and you have to put down salt. And if you don't, and somebody slips and breaks their neck, they can sue you. Right? It's always a problem in America about Shabbos. Like, what if there's a big snowfall on Friday night? How do you deal with with all of this on Shabbat when technically the municipality requires you to shovel your walk? So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar Leva'er Peirot Shvi'it. The second rainfall is also the date by which you have to do biur Bi'ur Shvi'it. You know, we're coming up on Shemitah. A year from now, Rosh Hashanah, next Rosh Hashanah, we start the Shemitah year. So food that grows during the Shemitah year has Kedusha. So right now on my pomegranate tree, there's still a couple of pomegranates. In a year from now, the pomegranates that are on the tree will not have Kedusha, even though Rosh Hashanah was already 3 weeks ago. Because those pomegranates grew over the summer. Those are the fruits of the seventh year. But in a year, in 2 years from now, when we're already in the eighth year, those pomegranates will have Kedushat Shvi'it, which means a few things. It means that they're Hefker, right? They don't belong to me, right? Because during Shemitah, all the fields belong to everyone. So I have to make the produce of my olive tree, of my pomegranate tree, of our raspberry bush, have to be made Hefker. Everybody has to be able to come and have free access to it. But it also means that those fruits have Kedusha. They can't, like Truma has Kedusha. But unlike Truma, which today can't be eaten, because you have to be, in order to eat Truma, you have to first be a Kohen. And you also have to be Tahor. And since we don't have the Paraduma and everybody is assumed to be Tame today, nobody can eat Truma, which is why when we do Truma Tamasrot, we wrap up the Truma and we dispose of it, we burn it. But the Perot Shvi'it, everybody can eat. However, you can't waste it. And you can't dispose of it in a disrespectful manner because of its sanctity. Which is why everyone will have some kind of little pach, a little Tupperware or something, where when you're done with the fruit, if there's a little bit leftovers, you have to let it sit until it rots and is no longer edible. And then at that point, it can be thrown away in a respectable way. You're allowed to keep and eat peirot that are Kedushat Shvi'it in your home. You are not, however, allowed to hoard it, because it's hefker. It's meant to be, everybody's meant to have a fair shot to get this. So I can't go out and corner the market, right? If somebody has whatever kind of tree, somebody has an apricot tree, and if I really love apricots, I can't go into their garden and say, well, there's 400 apricots on this tree right now. And since I really like apricots, I'm going to take them home and I'll make apricot preserves or something. I'll eat as long as they're fresh, I'll eat them, and then I'll start making preserves and I'll have cornered the market on free apricots. You're allowed a certain amount to keep in your house for your own use, but you can't hoard it. And then at a certain date, when that product is no longer widely available in the marketplace for everyone. You know how it is. I mean, it's not like we talked about this recently. I forget in which context. Unlike in America, where you can go into the supermarket in America and get strawberries 365 days a year. You can get strawberries, you can get raspberries, you can get pineapples, you get all this seasonal fruit, which is available around the year, either because it's grown in hothouses or because it's imported from the southern hemisphere when it's winter in Chicago, right? You could get it all year long. So that's not the way fruit is supposed to work, right? There's seasons. And you know that there are strawberries in strawberry season, and there are raspberries in raspberry season, cherry season. You know, here in Gush Etzion, we know when it's cherry season, right? But it's a certain window. There's like a month or 5-6 weeks at the beginning of the summer, from around Shavuos time and on, when it's cherry season, and on every street corner, every time you come in and out of a frat, there's a kid standing there with a little stand selling a quart of cherries. Right? You can't find cherry for the love of money. You can't find cherries in the shuk right now. So at the point where the produce goes out of season, At that point, it's not reasonable for you to have it still stored in your house. And there's a halakha called Bi'ur Shvi'it. At that date, I have to take the produce out of my house, and I have to be mafkir it. Right? Bi'ur here is not like what we mean by Bi'ur Chametz. Bi'ur Chametz means to burn it, to destroy it. Bi'ur here means hefker. You take it out into the Reshut HaRabim, perhaps in front of at least two witnesses, and you say, Hare ze hefker. And anybody who wants can come and take it, because you're not allowed to be having that anymore in your house. This is very relevant for wine, which is Kedushat Shvi'it. Because the truth is, how long can cherries or apricots or raspberries last? If you hoard it all up, it's going to spoil before the Zman Bi'ur. But wine is a, or oil are products that... What is that? What is that noise? Wine or oil... Ephraim, we're having trouble here. If you're trying to talk, we don't hear you. Your voice is coming out funny.
He's muted.
No, I just muted him. Go ahead, Ephraim. Try talking again. No. You sound like the chipmunks. You sound like the chipmunks. But wine, if you can put into the chat, Ephraim, if you have a question. But wine is something that, you know, we all know can sit in the cellar for years and years and years and years. So what if I went and I chopped up all the Kedushat Shvi'it grapes and I made wine out of it? I have barrels and barrels and barrels of wine. That's not really fair because I took more than my fair share. So when it comes to Zman Bi'ur, which for wine is Pesach of the following year, right? Pesach of the eighth year, Erev Pesach of the eighth year, you have to take all the Kedushat Shvi'it wine that you have in stock, minus whatever the minimum amount is per person. I think it's Arba Kosot per person in your house. So one bottle of wine is more or less Arba Kosot. So if you have four people at home, you can't really legitimately claim to keep more than four bottles of Kedushat Shvi'it wine that has the sanctity of the Shemitah year in your house. So you have to take the rest of your wine cellar out to the Reshut HaRabim and say, this is Hefker. And if somebody comes along and takes it, Gesundheit. I remember once being at Tiferet Avot on Erev Pesach of the year after, it must have been two Shemitahs ago, so 14 some odd years ago. And somebody brought a couple of cases of wine, of Kedushat Shvi'it wine, and after the Siyum on Erev Pesach, the person stood up, I forget his name, I can picture him in my head, I forget his name, he lives over there in Dekel, he put out these couple of cases of wine, and he said, this is Hefker. Right, because he had to, but I don't know like what he was hoping, but in reality, people didn't really understand exactly what he was doing, and they thought it was really Hefker, and on Erev Pesach, you can always use an extra bottle of wine, and people walked away with most of it, so, which is, of course, mutter. So, another reason that we need to know the date of the second phase of autumn rain, which again, according to Rabbi Yossi, is the 23rd of Cheshvan, is for the dating of Bi'ur Kedushat Shvi'it, Leva'er Perot Shvi'it, Ditznan, Ad Matai Nehenim V'Sorfin B'Tevin U'Vakash Shel Shvi'it, Ad Sh'Tered Revi'ah Shni'ah. So each type of produce has a different date. And next year, they'll be publishing all of these calendars. Everyone will get a calendar for the dates of when Kedushat Shvi'it begins. Because not all produce begins having Kedushat Shvi'it immediately from Rosh Hashanah. Like I said, right now, let's imagine it's a year from now. And we're at the very beginning of the Shemitah year. So all vegetables, Vegetables go according to when you pick them. So if I go onto my Facebook, I should be able to find it from exactly 6 years ago. We have tomatoes out in the garden. We had a tomato that was big and ripe on the vine on Erev Rosh Hashanah of Shemitah. Right? I mean, it grew. It was almost completely. I could have picked it on Erev Rosh Hashanah. I just didn't. And had I picked it on Erev Rosh Hashanah, what would have I had to do to eat it? No? I assume Ephraim is saying, take Trumot Umasrot. Right, I would have had to take Trumot Umasrot. 48 hours. Right, 48 hours later, on Motzei Rosh Hashanah, we went out and we picked that very same tomato, but now it had Kedushat Shvit. According to the Ramban, there's a mitzvah to eat it. The Ramban had an opinion that eating the Perot Shvit itself constitutes a mitzvah, and I didn't have to take Trumot Umasrot because it's Hefker. And if one of you had been in my backyard at that moment, you would have been allowed to take that tomato, and I wouldn't have been able to stop you. So on Motzei Rosh Hashanah, we pick the very same tomato, and we eat it. You don't have to take Trumot Umasrot because it already has Kedushat Shvit. But fruits, it doesn't depend on when you pick it. It depends upon when the fruit comes into its fullness. So if on Motzei Rosh Hashanah, I go out and I pick that pomegranate off the tree, it's still a fruit that's connected to the sixth year. And I have to take Trumot Umasrot, even though it's already Shemitah, and it won't be, the pomegranates won't be Kadosh B'Kedushat Shvit, have the sanctity of the sabbatical year, until the crop that will begin to grow in the following summer, in the summer of 2022, right? Almost at the end of the Shemitah year, right? Those will be the pomegranates that have the Kedushat Shvit. Each fruit has a date that the Kedusha begins. And there'll be these calendars that'll tell you when the Kedusha for each and every fruit begins, and when the Zman Biur, when the date is where you say, you're not going to find it anymore in the Shuk. Right? You know, that's the beauty of it. That's why it's better than the supermarkets in America where you can get everything all the time. Here you have a sense of you know when the seasons are based upon what's happening at the greengrocers, right? That your diet and the seasons kind of overlap. And it's like amazing, like, you know, like one day you go into the shuk and it's full of strawberries. And like 2 days later, you go back and there's not a strawberry to be had. And if you ask the merchant where are the strawberries, he looks at you like you're crazy. He looks at you like you know, like the proverbial guy who goes into the hardware store looking to order a pound of cheese, right? It because don't you know? Strawberry season is over. So for kash and tevin, for hay and straw, which is an important thing to have because you use hay and straw to feed your animals and you use hay and straw to heat your stove. So hay and straw also has Kedushat Shvit. And the Zman Biur for hay and straw is the 23rd of Cheshvan. The day on which the second rain begins. So knowing when the second rain is supposed to begin and knowing how to paskin in the machloket about when all the dates of the rain come, here's another reason we need to know. My taima dichtiv ulevehemtecha ulachaya asher ba'artzacha. That's what the pasuk in Parshat Bahar says, that the food that's out there in the fields is hefker. Anyone can come and take it. Any people can come and take it, and any of the animals and any of the animals of the field should eat of it. Ha'ochel v'emtecha bevayit, kalal ha'chaya min ha'sadeh, kalal v'emtecha min ha'bayit. And when it's no longer readily available out in the field, so then you have to do the bi'ur, you have to remove it from your own home. And that date, at least for straw and hay, is the beginning of the second rain. The Gemara asks, what time is it? Okay. The Gemara asks, hold on, let me move the screen. Here. The Gemara asks, Omar Rabbi Abahu, my lashon rivia. What does this word rivia, this rainfall, this nickname for this type of rain, the rain that comes at the beginning of the year, what does this word mean? Davar sheroveya et hakarka, kiderav Yehuda. It talks about something which is roveya, the earth. It penetrates the earth, meaning the rain comes and the rain penetrates the earth and it sinks down into the hard dirt. The Omar of Yehuda, Mitra Ba'ala Da'arahu. There's this kind of idiom that rain is the husband of the earth. Shne'emar, ki ka'asher yered hageshem v'asheleg min ha'shamayim v'shama lo yashuv, ki im hirva et ha'aretz laholida v'hitzmicha. It's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, chapter 55, which is the haftarah for fast days. It says that when the rain comes down, and the rain and the snow come down from the heaven and doesn't go back. Right? It's rain and snow fall, but they don't. Of course, we know, like in science class, we learned about the water cycle. The rain comes down and it then evaporates and it goes back up. But that's invisible to us. I mean, Yeshayahu might have also taken that science class. But it's invisible to us. You don't see the evaporation. It looks like rain and snow is a one-way street. And it comes down, and it waters the earth, and it causes the earth to literally give birth. Holida. Now, there's probably some kind of a sexual metaphor going on here. Right? In other words, the rain is the husband to the earth. Just like the husband gives forth the rain of his loins. Right, the husband gives forth the sperm and impregnates the woman, right, and it goes in. What goes in doesn't come out, etc. So that's probably the metaphor that's being played with here. Va'amar Rabbi Abahu, Rabbi Abahu. Well, hold on a second. Oh wait, so let's stop there. And consider for a second this idea of the rain is the husband of the earth. The Gemara, if you remember the Gemara on Daf Bey, the very first Daf of the Masechta on Daf Bey's, the Gemara had said that there are three keys, three maftechot, that Hashem doesn't give over to any shaliach. Right? There are a lot of things Hashem gives over to shlichim, to malachim, to people, their tasks that are given out. But there are three maftechot which he holds for himself. Do you remember what they are?
There was mechayim etim and giving birth and rain, right?
Yefe. Rain and childbirth and tchiyat ha-metim, and the revival of the dead. So when the Gemara says that the rain is the husband of the earth, so somehow, like, all three of these are tied together. that rain is somehow an aspect of all of these other things that aren't given over to a shaliach, to an emissary, in which God himself holds to his own and takes care of by himself. In addition to being rain being connected to the idea of parnasa, the idea of connected to our financial well-being, rain also, of course, brings forth life, just like in the metaphor here of the husband and the wife together bringing forth the rain and the earth together, bring forth the life of the produce, which keeps us alive. But rain is also compared to Tchiyat HaMetim. We'll see that on the next daf. And of course, we start saying Mashiv Haruach Merid HaGashem in which bracha? In Michaye HaMetim. In other words, these are considered to be somehow paradigmatic praises of Hashem's might. Just like he can revive the dead, so rainfall is a kind of revival of the dead, or it's a part of the work of the ongoing sustenance of the living. You know, these are connected ideas. So that's why the bracha is called Gvurot Geshamim. Not Gvurat Geshamim, but Gvurot Geshamim in the plural. These are the mighty multiple acts of rain, because they're all somehow connected. Okay, so we'll stop there and we'll continue from Daf Vav Amud Beis next week. Todah Rabba. Hello, Cecil. Cecil, where are you joining us from?
Kibbutz Ketura.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Okay, anachnu rubeinu nimtzeim be'efrat, b'gush etzion. Aval yesh gam od anashim she'nimtzeim itan. Okay, Todah Rabba. Lala tov.